America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. Actually, kind of a holiday edition, because this may or may not be our last show for the year.
No, we got next week, but after that, probably next week.
Okay, so next to last show for the year. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's now 9 days till Christmas. It's 12/14/2018. And also, I think, like 3 days until the death of Tumblr.
Basically.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are cropping up to take the place of the things that are dying on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Newgrounds, for example, suddenly just got a whole new mess of users.
Newgrounds, that was called?
Newgrounds, yes.
Oh, thank you for your service.
They were a thing once, and now they're a thing again.
Mm-hmm. Also, Twitter. Twitter allows adult content as well. So
yes.
Yeah. So, once again, I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and with me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, and Teresa Salmon. Say hi, everybody.
Good day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Hey.
So, once again, in the, you know, the weeks that are we have had so far and the weeks that are coming is basically the best Christmas present we could have other than, you know, Trump actually resigning, because the last couple weeks have just been the sweet, sweet, delicious flavor of watching his castle of sand finally tumble to the ground.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he doesn't seem to think so, but
no, that's actually what makes it even funnier. But yeah, so we got some more stuff that happened this week. Mueller dropped another bombshell. Trump's former fixer is actually getting sentenced to prison. A Russian spy is pleading guilty to basically acting as a Russian agent in the U.S. And we're going to tell you what makes that especially nice, because it happens to correlate with certain organizations within the United States that are of interest to the firearms industry.
To say the least.
Yeah. Also, another member of Trump's administration has announced that they are leaving at year's end, and it's a big one. And, of course, we've also got some, you know, science and entertainment news. And, yeah, so we'll get to all that. Plus, apparently Sonic's legs are swole, and if you don't believe me, just check out the recent movie posters. We'll be getting to all that and more on this episode of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off, as always, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
Recently, I purchased a license for Launchbox, the emulator front end that I was using for a while as a free version. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a whole bunch of new features. So I've been diving into that and getting everything set up. And yeah, it's a process. But yeah, I'm ending up with a very nice looking 10-foot interface for all of my emulators.
Mm-hmm.
So this is starting to look really, really nice. Right now I'm running into the issue where some GameCube ROMs just don't work, and I can't figure out why. I mean, my system should be able to run those just fine. I've tried four different emulators, but and they all seem to display the same problem. And yeah, it's weird. So yeah, some further investigation will need to be done on that front. Just that, or just maybe just give up on Game Gear entirely, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly get there.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, particularly because the problematic ROM is Shining Force 2, the Sword of Asia. So yeah.
Of course.
Want that one to work. So I've tried downloading that one 3 different times. They all display the same problem. So I don't think it's a corrupt ROM. So yeah. Just figure out what's going on there. But anyways. Apart from that, well, this is the holiday season, so there's holiday sales.
Mm-hmm.
PSN started their holiday sale, and I didn't have Mortal Kombat XL on the PS4. And since I don't have an Xbox One anymore, I can't play that game anymore. So I picked up Mortal Kombat XL for, I think it was $7.50.
It was good, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was a good price, so I picked that up.
You see how many items are on sale?
It's like a couple thousand. It's
like
a lot.
1,200, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot. And yeah, so I've been going through that. And GOG, yeah, that's where the rest of my little meager holiday budget went. I spent $26 and ended up with 32 games. So
I think you got a couple free too.
Yeah, two of those. I got Fantasy Generals, Full Throttle Remastered, and Everspace for free. And the others were, well, stuff that I've had on my wish list for a while, and they basically dropped down to $2 a piece, so I picked everything up. Like, got Moto Racer 3 Gold, which I didn't have. I got the first three MK games. I got Ultima 1 through 9. Let's see, Realms of Arcadia is another RPG series I really enjoyed back in the day, so I picked up all three of those. Basically, I just went crazy on the PC RPGs, so... as you do. Yeah. And Starflight, because, yeah, I remember those being pretty damn good, even though they were kind of primitive as far as what they, you know, when they came out. But, yeah, a lot of good stuff on GOG, and I think they said they had like 2,000-plus items on sale. And yeah, it's very well worth going over there and having a look. At the very least, just grab Full Throttle Remastered for free, because that's... You know, that's a good one to get. Yeah. Oh, and yeah, if you've not played Dragon Age 1, yeah, they've got the Ultimate Edition there on PC for I think it's $6. So instead of $25. So hey, good prices there. And I expect I'll be playing quite a bit of RPGs over the winter.
Yeah.
So that's it for me. What about you?
All right. Go ahead, Pat.
So I got in on the sales as well, but not quite to the same extent. One item I did pick up on the PSN sale was Pure Pool for like $3.
Yeah.
And this is the game that I've wanted ever since I got my hands on Side Pocket for the first time. I have not been able to put it down. I just wish I'd known that it had existed. I would have gladly paid full price for it.
Yeah, that's the one by Vufu, right?
I'm not sure who the studio is, but...
yeah, I think it is. It's a very, like, low UI kind of game, which is real nice. Yeah.
That's what it needed to be.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, it's a sequel to Hustle Kings, I think.
I think they're doing a new game called This Is Pool.
Yep.
I don't understand why they don't. I think they've kind of nailed it here. They don't really need to take another step.
Yeah.
Unless we're talking VR compatibility or something.
Yeah, I think Pure Pool has that already.
All right.
I think it's Hustle Kings that has VR.
Hustle Kings, yeah. Okay. So, anyway, Pool, it's... I really should pick that one up, too, because I had it on Xbox One, and now I don't have it anymore. So.
Yeah, it is fantastic. Mm. Other than that, I got the Hulu Black Friday deal, so I'll be paying $1 a month for it for the next year. And I checked out this ABC show called A Million Little Things, which, based on the first 10 or 15 minutes of it, it actually seemed like the kind of thing that I would write. And it was a rather curious series, so I decided to follow it a bit, but after about 5 episodes, it just got way too soapy for my tastes.
Yeah.
So I backed out, which is a shame because it had so much potential.
All right. Chris, what about you?
So I checked out the newest episode of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is all about I think they call it Solstice, which is sort of their winter holiday special.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good. It's a little bit weird because the big baddie does not get too much screen time. It's the whole thing kind of centers around, it's a thing that happens sort of late in the season, but it's about Sabrina trying to learn more about her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that plays out pretty well in there. And I watched another MST 3K movie. This is in the first Netflix season. A movie called Reptilicus, which was made in Denmark, and it is really bad. And it's kind of hilarious when this creature sort of breaks out of the like tank it's in and escapes, and the army sort of goes after it. I think it's set in Denmark,
mm-hmm.
too. So you obviously see like the army like shooting, never with the monster in the same screen. But when they go to the monster getting attacked, the video quality is really shit, which they joke about. Oh, the monsters ruined the film stock, stuff like that. And it's pretty well done for a movie where not much happens. There is a weird point where the scientist that wants to preserve and study the monster tells the general, like, you can't kill it. We need to study it. You need to take it out without destroying it. And it's like, well, how the hell do we do that? And he's like, I don't know. It's like, okay. I think they devolve some sort of like powder bomb to shoot into its mouth and that causes it to pass out. I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty good. And it was interesting seeing the beginning of the Netflix part of that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Cause they have a bit of a beginning parts with like the mission control, I guess, for the delivery company that Joel works mm-hmm. for, which has Will Wheaton is mm-hmm. one of the two there. And they're talking about how he's a rebel, but also he does his work really well. Like we're really admiration for him. But then he goes on this fake distress call on the other side of the moon and they lose contact with him.
Yep.
And that's how he gets stranded in this station and forced to watch shitty movies. but yeah, it's all pretty good. And so I got a new game on PS4 and Xbox One called Idle Champions. I mentioned this before. Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's a D&D-themed idle game where you're kind of setting up your party to sort of try to manage all the buffs and such that the different heroes have. Because some of them will be like, oh, if you put them ahead of your, like at the front of your party, like the people in the column behind them will get increased damage, that sort of stuff. There's one character you generally want to put kind of in the middle of as many heroes as you can because they will be able to buff damage quite a bit. There's some that will heal others and all these different buffs and such that they do as you kind of set up the party. And so they've adapted it all for controllers and it works pretty well. It controls very differently from the PC version because you don't control everything with a mouse. So it can take a bit to get used to it. And so you lose a couple aspects of it, not having a cursor. There are a bunch of stages where like your main goal is to collect these items that enemies drop.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to just keep grinding on that level for longer than you should, you kind of just don't pick them up. Kind of use your mouse cursor to just highlight the gold around it to pick that stuff up. Mm. Sort of give you a little bit longer to grind out gold for that, for the upgrades for each of the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really do that here. You kind of just have to kind of just let it sit as the items will, you know, scroll over into the heroes and get collected. And yeah, they got a promotion going on for the console versions for some free chests and such. So it's pretty well done so far, and I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. It's just like the game I boot up for a little bit every day, kind of checking mm-hmm. on it. Definitely something people should check out if they are interested in those kinds of games. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a lot better than Adventure Capitalist on PS4, which crashes... crashes yeah. half the time you try and start it.
Yeah, crashes half the time. And they like, it's like they gave up on it. They got to a certain point and then just like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, which is great because it's a game that needs probably a couple updates.
Yeah.
Because the controls do not work all that well.
Nope.
Which is kind of needed for a game that's all about managing this these upgrades.
Yeah.
It's kind of all controls. There's no real anything else to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clicker Heroes is pretty good on both platforms. Yeah. And this one kind of joins that as being pretty solid for what it is.
I'm going to try the second Clicker Heroes at some point.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to. The $30 up front is kind of the thing that's like pushing me off right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except, you know, $30 up front, but I'm guessing there's no microtransactions afterwards, so.
No.
You just get a game.
Yeah. What it's just concept. Kind of having the $30 right now is not
yeah.
a thing.
Because
mm-hmm. there's like that PSN sale and these others that are going on.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I could spend $30 on Clicker Heroes, or I could just put it on like five different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll win out most of the time. But, yeah. Also playing more Celeste on the Switch, and I'm in the third area. Basically, the point... I got past the point where you're kind of in a dream scenario. And now I'm going a bit into the part where you get these areas that you kind of dash through and not use up your dash, which is pretty nice. Though if you mess it up, you can shoot yourself into a wall and kill yourself, which is pretty tricky in some of these instances. But yeah, that's still a really good platformer. And I really like the tone of that compared to like Super Meat Boy, where Super Meat Boy kind of, you know, was celebratory of its brutalness, whereas Celeste is not. It's just like, oh, you died. Try again. Just keep going. I think even to the point you can turn on assist if you need it. But I have not done that yet, at least. But yeah, I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. And that's pretty much it. It's not freezing cold yet.
Mm-hmm.
I had just the jacket on today. No, nothing under it. No extra layers, at least. so that was a bit weird. Like, oh, I can feel my jacket under on my arms, and not have like two or three layers of other things in there impeding that. But I think it's supposed to drop down to like the 30s next week, so that feeling will be gone pretty quickly.
Yep.
As winter just takes a giant shit all over this place.
Yep.
A white shit. But that's pretty much it.
I think that's called guano.
bird shit.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
Well, I tried Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
And about 5 minutes in, I'm like, nah, man, there's other shit I want to play way more than this. So it promptly got returned to the library. gave it a shot. No. I think I don't like the movie, but no. but I played a good bit of Red Dead Redemption 2. And a little salty that I've got to return that to the library soon. But I was able to renew it, so that, you know, 2 weeks will be a pretty decent bit of time with it, and I'm totally buying that. That's gonna happen. But other than that, Kingdom, you know, that tower defense game on Steam, well, it's also on Xbox Game Pass and a few other things. They came out with their next game. It's called Two Crowns, and it has couch co-op and online play as well. And I've been playing that a lot since it hit Game Pass on Wednesday, because Microsoft did not give them the big button so they could push it and say, yes, please put this on Game Pass. Tuesday. So they were all apologies that, you know, they couldn't get it done, but, you know, they were doing what they could. But other than that, you know, just watching the same old, same old. I think we were just about caught up with Voltron, and then season 8 dropped this week, I believe. So now we are nowhere near caught up. But that's a good problem to have. But really, that's about it. Oh, and I don't work anymore. I'm done with my contract. So that was kind of
all right.
Thing. Yeah.
We need the Final Fantasy Victory music on a drop here for situations like
oh,
this.
Oh, my God, right?
Yeah, I need to get a soundboard for this thing. Yeah. Did you by any chance set the place on fire while you were walking out?
No.
No, because it's her place.
Yeah, right? Because I was No, it was amicable. You know, the contract was almost over, and yeah, she was just kind of like, so when do you want to end it? And I'm like, well, today's okay.
Oh, you mean I can be done with this now? Okay.
Yeah. So I went and cleared a good foot of snow off of my car and tried to figure out how to drive to where I was going. After what was pretty much blizzard conditions had screwed up, it like white-outed all of the faces of our traffic signals.
Oh, wow.
So like you're looking at the ones up there. No. You're looking at the ones on the side. No.
That explains some communications I had with utility providers in your neck of the woods around that time.
Yeah. And the snow stayed all over, snow and ice stayed all over the trees, knocked down a lot of those. And the sides of buildings and whatnot, it really made a big mess. Yeah. It stayed for several days.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of had to look at the other people's traffic signals to figure out when you could go. It was interesting. But that was about it.
All right, just quick pop quiz. If you're in like a four-way stop, you know, and like the street lights are out, you know the red lights and everything are out, or they're otherwise blocked or you can't see them, what are you supposed to do?
Four-way stop.
Yeah,
you treat it like it's a four-way stop. Why does nobody fucking know that?
You know what?
And I'm not even a licensed driver.
Yeah.
I got behind this dickweed who, on a two-lane road, a residential side street, did not stop for school bus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so pissed off. I wanted to see who this jackass in the truck was. And I figured it was some old motherfucker who didn't know what he was doing. No, man. It was somebody about 28, 29. I really wanted to roll down my window and give him a piece of my mind.
Yeah.
But that's how you get killed.
Yeah.
No, people just are stupid. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I can come up with.
People are dumb. That's a pretty good way of just to go about life. Assume that people are dumb.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, so as for me... much like Phil, I'm pretty much other than Mutant Day Zero, I'm pretty much playing just old shit. Because honestly, until Christmas, I really don't have anything else to play. Because all the really good shit doesn't start coming out until early next year. So, I decided to let loose $35 on PSN, and I downloaded an old PS2 RPG I never got a chance to play back in the day because, well, for those of you who don't remember, back in the day, there were all the PS2 JRPGs. There was just too many of them. And it was just straight impossible to be able to play them all. So I ended up downloading Resonance of Fate, which...
Well, that was PS3, actually.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's possible.
had the era of Square just making a bunch of RPGs.
Well, yeah, so this was
actually Tri-Ace.
Yeah, this was Tri-Ace and Sega as okay. well. And I actually got the HD version on the PSN, and I mean, it's got a great, you know, a really neat universe it takes place in. It's very kind of steampunky with some essential pieces of modern fashion, I guess. And, you know, it's got a great idea and everything, and the story's nice, but the tutorial fucking sucks.
The tutorial is about as far as I got in that game. I'll be honest with you.
I did eventually figure it all out and make its way through. That tutorial does not explain shit. It'll tell you the basics at the very first, but once it starts getting into trying to explain to you what the more complicated mechanics are, it makes a lot of assumptions about what you know.
Did they call in a bunch of old SNK interns from the 90s for this tutorial?
Yeah, because...
That's the impression I've always gotten.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, for example, just a good example, some of the main, sort of more complicated mechanics, like, okay, so basically this game is just eaten up in the old, like, John Woo action movie type shit, as far as its battle mechanics are concerned.
Yeah.
And basically every character, they can either, you know, move about and then have, like, you know, attack, because for the record, every character in this game is armed with guns. The combat is all based around firearms. Can you tell that they were trying to aim this game at us Americans?
Oh yeah.
But you can do that, or you can do what they call the a hero action, which is where you sort of are given a you plan out a straight line in a direction you want to go, as far out as you want to go. And then your character then starts running automatically. Now, what you can do during this time is you can shoot whatever enemy is you want to, because you can, you know, switch between enemies on the fly. But depending on how far away or how close they are to you, determines on how long it takes to actually shoot them, or whether or not you can actually shoot them at all. And you can just run in the straight line, or you can press the square button again, and then you go through this, you do this amazing somersault through the air sequence.
Yeah.
Where you can just basically hover in the air and shoot everyone at will. But there's another thing in the game. There's another mechanic that's called Smackdown. And they don't really explain it to you very well how this works. But what you're supposed to do is, as you're running, you know, across the field doing your hero action, you're supposed to get close enough to an enemy, and hopefully your level is high enough that with every attack, that with the first attack or two, it'll send them into the air. And then what you're supposed to do is then you're then supposed to jump up and then attack them from, I think, usually nominally from on top of them. Unfortunately, the tutorial does not explain that you have to do that first run sequence first and then jump. So I was basically there for about 20 minutes trying to figure out, you know, just jumping around like a dumbass thinking, what am I supposed to do?
Yep.
Yeah. Then, of course, there's like...
I remember that.
Oh, and then there's the group action shit. Because basically, you know, I mentioned earlier about the hero action. If you can get your characters enough into sort of a general area around themselves, you can create what they call a group action, which is where you basically go between all three of your characters and they can each individually keep attacking as long as you know, your turn continues. But they don't do a very good job of explaining to you exactly what you're supposed to do, like what buttons you're supposed to press and in what order. So it's really kind of trial and error at first.
Yeah.
But after I got all of that, I was good, until I also had to work with the fucking hex cells, which is something that you have to use in order to get around in this game. Because they don't really explain very well at first how that's supposed to work. Basically, every area in this game is divided up into hexagons. And as you go through the game, you get these things called hex power cells. And they usually come in like connected groups of four. And so it's kind of like Tetris looking. And you're supposed to get them into a, you know, when you're needing to get to a new area that you can't access yet, you take these power cells when you're in the overmap and you put them in these sections where, you know, the hexagons are. So, like, if you need to get to another area and that area, you know, has none of the power cells activated, you then have to put the groups of hexes on there and then basically make a little pathway to it. What they don't tell you is that, well, first, there's only a limited number of them, and two, you occasionally come across special and color hex squares, which require different color hexes, and they don't really tell you where you get those. You actually, in fact, the very first ones you encounter are red hexes, and the only way you actually get them is there's like a story sequence you have to go through. But, you know, it's a lot of misaiming and shit. But other than that, after I got through all that, it was good. So
was there an online tutorial that taught you how the game was actually played? Or
I had to go on YouTube and look.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was one of those games.
This is how you know your designers are shit.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'm pretty sure they outsourced the tutorial to former SNK interns from the 90s.
Yeah. So
where I got stuck was that thing where you supposedly got bonuses for performing an attack by running between your other two party members or some shit.
Yeah, because basically the way that the game does these turns is I forget what they're called. I think they're called Boleto or something. But basically it's these little blocks at the bottom of the screen that tell you, like, how many turns each character has before the turn is over. And, yeah, if you run between where two of your characters are when doing a hero action, you can actually get one of them back. But yeah, so that's pretty much what I've been playing. Other than that, I'm doing my usual reading. I've been reading this absolutely amazing science fiction novel that I am absolutely surprised very few people have heard of. It's by a guy by the name of, a guy named George Wright Paget, and it's called Spin Down. It's a small press book, but damn, is it good. It takes place on like a mining colony, like a space station that's orbiting Jupiter. And at the beginning of at the prologue, there's like a story about like some colonists or whatever. But when you get into the actual story, you then discover who like the main characters are. The main characters of this book are basically workers who work the mining facility at the station. They are clones, basically, that are produced, and all of them have like a hierarchy, and like they all have a specific station that they work in. They know nothing else outside of that general parameter, and they have no idea that there's anything outside of the station. Well, around at the beginning of the book, there's this group of, I guess you could say, vigilantes. They're more like a liberation force who break into this into the space station because apparently a bunch of governments all over the galaxy are being overthrown. And basically they're coming in so that they can free these clones and they can, you know, not live lives as slaves. But what happens is that the station basically goes haywire when it realizes that there's a foreign presence on it. So these machines called hybrivores, which are basically like, I guess they're like greenery and garbage disposal units that basically they're kind of like one of those, like, you know, you see the in like every piece of science fiction, the hovering eye that hovers in the sky and rolls around, has a robotic voice or whatever. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Like the fucking, what was it, the oracles from Destiny. Except these things also are fairly large, and they have very large helicopter blades that spin around, and you can kind of guess what ends up happening to these liberation guys.
Yeah.
It basically
human
chops
flesh
them up.
Doesn't stand up very well to that.
Yeah. And suddenly, these clones, as the system basically goes haywire and more or less turns against them because for whatever reason its programming has broken down and now it's decided that it needs to purge just about everything in the station. And that's not even counting the fact that all of the station stuff has basically the power is going on and out and shit's breaking down. And now they have to figure out, okay, so we need to go to this place called Superintendent because they don't know what that actually is. They think it's a place. And, you know, get, like, new nutrition packs and stuff and try and find a way out of this place. It's kind of watership downish because they do it all in sort of their own language and the way they perceive the universe. And it is damn good. Highly recommend it. Very good. Other than that, pretty much having to deal with, like, fucking, other than Christmas shit, also, like, we're still doing house renovations. We got all the new tiling in, and it's all grouted. Now we're dealing with the walls, so we had to score the wallpaper, which is a bitch to do. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had to do that before. It is a very thankless task.
Anything wallpaper sounds like torture.
Yeah. My mom was basically like, I am never using wallpaper ever again.
You know, all it took was that damn border that we used to put up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
God, no.
Yeah. It was funny, as we were scoring the wallpaper, and we actually saw the wallpaper that was originally underneath it.
Ooh, how hideous was that?
Nauseating.
I love that you had to, like, actually find an appropriate word for that one.
Yeah, so we actually had layers that we had to score.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. But once we get that in, I think the cabinets are supposed to come in Tuesday, and then, of course, we got to start moving all the shit back into the kitchen. So that includes the microwave, the tables, the silverware. I think we're getting – no, we're not. We're got to rehook the oven back up and the dishwasher. Yeah, all that shit. Before you start to get worried, though, we've basically been using paper plates and utensils. So
yeah,
we haven't had to deal with any dirty dishes we've actually had to wash. But yeah, I don't know why my mom decided we had to do this around Christmas, but
yeah,
she keeps telling me it's going to be worth it when it's all finished.
Well, I'm not really sure that a lot of guys give two shits.
I don't.
At least he's honest.
Yeah, renovations are...
they suck.
Yeah.
But Yeah, apparently this is something we have to do because apparently, you know, we own the property, so every so often you have to renovate shit, or at least that's what she keeps telling me.
Okay. Whatever she says, right?
Yeah. But anyway, all right. So, are we done? Do we have anything else we want to add before we move on?
I'm good.
All right. Well, then I guess it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I had a little bit of a historical thing that I wanted to bring up because, okay, so when you're thinking of, like, fine dining, and when I say fine dining, I don't mean just, like, any fine dining. I mean shit that makes you pay out the ass. What type of thing do you usually imagine? Something like foie gras, you know?
The kind of thing I've never had the money to experience.
Duck a l'orange.
Yeah.
Stuff involving copious amounts of saffron. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was doing, you know, because as being a student of history, I like to read history books. And there was this one event, this one particular thing that happened way back in 1867. It's a historical event known as the Three Emperors Dinner. It was a banquet. It was a banquet that was held at the Café Anglais in Paris. It's called the Three Emperors Dinner because the main attendants were King William I of Prussia, Tsar Alexander II, plus the future Tsar Alexander III was also there, and Prince Otto von Bismarck. And basically, the Tsar called up this chef by the name of Adolf Duguay, and he told him, give us a banquet. We're going to be in town. Spare no expense. So the chef.
So he goes and buys a boat.
Pretty much. No, what happens is he's like, well, damn, if I can do that, then I'm going to get my hands on as much shit as I can. So the whole meal itself was about 16 courses long. It consisted of 8 wines that were used. And the cost of the meal was about 400 francs per person, which, to give you an idea of what that's like in modern terms, that's about 9,000 euros in today's prices. That's about 9,000 euros per person, or equivalent.
Ooh.
Yeah. It lasted about 8 hours, and apparently the wines were actually what made this particular meal so expensive. And in fact, back in 2002, an Australian chef named Shannon Bennett actually tried to recreate the banquet. And even though they were able to, like, update the ingredients and stuff to modern equivalents, it still came out to about $7,500 per person. This was some expensive shit, and it's considered to be probably the most expensive meal ever put on in the Western world. So I've got the menu here of all 16 courses, and I'm just going to go through them very quickly for two reasons. First is to show that, honestly, a whole lot hasn't really changed as far as what we consider fine dining is. But also to sort of show that old school haute cuisine was just really fucking weird in some really odd ways. You'll see what I mean, all right? Okay, so here we go. The first course was called Potage Imperatrice, and basically it was a chicken stock that was thickened with tapioca, finished with egg yolks and cream, to which poached rounds of chicken forcemeat, cock's combs, cock's kidneys, and green peas are added. Yeah. So already we're like, the fuck?
Yeah, it's not exactly what we eat now.
Yeah. The course after that was Potage Fontage, which was a puree of fresh peas diluted with a consommé with the addition of a chiffonade, that's a small slice mixture of sorrel and sprigs of chervil. So basically, it was like a pea soup with some herbs and spices thrown in, which is, okay. Next was Soufflé à la Reine, which was a chicken soufflé with truffles, which was then served with sauce Vientine, which was a white wine sauce with tarragon vinegar, shallots, and chervil, which was then mounted with butter and finished with chopped chervil and tarragon.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, I can get behind that one.
Oh, yeah.
I would eat all of that.
Yeah. The next was Selle de Mouton Pure et Breton, which is a saddle of mutton. You guys know what mutton is, right? Yeah. With a puree of broad beans, which was bound with a Breton sauce, which, for those of you who don't know, a Breton sauce is basically kind of like the equivalent of a sauce soubise, which has a base of a bechamel, except instead of a bechamel, it's a velou, which is brown sauce. And it's got like onion, leeks, celery hearts, and mushrooms, mounted with butter and cream. So, okay, not so bad, right? Okay, this next one actually legit sounds amazing. Are you ready for this? It's called Poulet à la Portugais. It's a whole chicken that's been roasted with a covering of an adobo paste, which consisted of a tomato, red bell pepper, garlic, oregano, paprika, cayenne pepper, brown sugar, lemon juice, white wine, chicken stock, and olive oil, which was then in turn stuffed with the tomato-flavored rice.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm you all for that.
Just shoot it into my veins.
Yeah, I'm all for that one. Okay, next up is pâté chaud de caillasse, which is a quail pâté. I've had pâté before, so I'm like, okay, that's cool. All right, next is where it starts to get really odd. Are you ready for this? Homard à la Parisienne. It's a lobster that's cooked in Cubillon, which is then cut into slices and then glazed with aspic, with a garnish of tomatoes, which have been stuffed with a small, tiny chopped salad of vegetables, which is then dressed with a mixture of mayonnaise and more aspic, and then garnished with sliced truffle.
Wait, what's aspic?
Meat jello.
Oh, like from hooves and stuff?
You ever boiled beef and noticed a weird jelly substance that starts coming out?
Hell yeah. I mean,
that's aspic.
I put vinegar in my frickin' stock so I can pull it out of the bones.
Yep, that's aspic.
Okay.
That's what it is. And for some reason in old school cuisine, that shit was everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's super healthy for you in moderation.
Yeah. Today we know aspic is basically just the savory version of Jell-O. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
All right, next up, and this one's going to require a little bit of explaining. Canneton à la Rennais, which to make that into modern language, that is canard à la pressé, which is pressed duck. Now, have you guys ever heard of what pressed duck is? I'll explain. Pressed duck is when you take a fully grown duck of a there's like a particular species that's preferred, that's then strangled so it keeps all the juices in. Then, you know, it's skinned and gutted and all that. Then they then cut the legs and the breast off and give them a nice cooking. The legs and grilled, the breasts are thinly sliced and arranged around the stuffing. Now then, the remaining carcass that's left over is then put into a contraption known as a poultry press. It's basically like a big wine press, but it's smaller and it's bell-shaped. You stick the carcass into this contraption, and then there's like a little turning wheel at the top. And you spin the wheel down, and there's a little, like a little fountain or like a little faucet at the bottom of it where you put a little bowl. And as you're pressing it down, it extracts all the juices that are in there. That includes the blood and the bone marrow and all that into this little bowl, which you then use to make a sauce called Rouennaise, which, you know, you add some onions, some garlic, some pepper, maybe some vinegar. And then you then put it over the pressed duck. And as for like what it looks like, let me just show you what this thing looks like at the end. Let me see. Yep, here we go. This is typically what it's supposed to look like after it's all done. This right here.
See, nobody told me about the poultry victims of the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Oh, but it gets worse, because after that, you then have something called Ortolan Circanape, which is Ortolan served on toast. You guys know what an Ortolan is? It's an itty-bitty little songbird that's part of the bunting family. It's known in around France. They're kind of like tiny little finches. In order to make these things, you literally have to drown them in wine. And I don't mean after they're dead. I mean you literally have to drown them in wine.
Cause of death.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then afterwards, let's see. Okay. They're, like, caught in nets when they're flying through around Africa. Then they're kept in covered cages and boxes. Then you have to, like, feed them a lot. Back in the old days, they used to actually, like, take out the bird's eyes so it would think it was night and make it eat more. Then it's thrown into a container of Armagnac, which both drowns and marinates it. Then it's roasted for 8 minutes, and then it's plucked and seasoned and marinated. And then it's served whole. There's no slicing, no removing head or bones or anything. No, it's just served whole. And in order to get, like, the full effect of it, you're supposed to eat it in one bite. And when you eat it in one bite, you're supposed to eat it underneath a underneath a napkin or a covering. With, like, your head underneath the napkin or the covering while you're eating it. And there's two reasons to do this. One is so that you can get all the aromas and flavors at once without anything else distracting you. And the second is so that you can hide your sin from God.
Oh, my God. These people, this is why we have the fucking internet, people.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to do shit like this in order to entertain ourselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have... many flavors of Doritos, so that's not a valid argument.
Yeah, alright. Then the next course was aubergine a la Espanol. Do you guys know what aubergine is? Eggplants. So basically, it's a dish of eggplant shells, which are filled with a chopped mixture of eggplant meat, tomato, ham, which is then gratinated with Gruyere cheese. And then the last penultimate course is Castellet Princesse, which, for those you don't know, that is a Castellet, which, do you guys know what a Castellet is? It's basically like a equivalent to a casserole, which is made with a border of Dutch's potatoes and a filling of asparagus and cream sauce. Okay, that actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And finally, the last thing, the dessert, bombe glacée, because of course this is the Victorian era, and these are a bunch of emperor dipshits. Bombe glacée is basically an ice cream dessert, which is frozen in a spherical mold and covered in chocolate, so it looks like you're eating a cannonball.
See, I could hang out with these people.
And as for the wines, so this was like in... Yeah, this is 1867. The most recent vintage for the wines that they had was 1848. The oldest was 1810. So we're talking about shit that had been, you know, preserved for decades. And that was the Three Emperors Dinner. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah, this is why we have gaming consoles now, so we don't have to entertain ourselves with shit like this.
Yeah, some of that does sound pretty good, though.
Oh, no doubt. Some of that legit looks and sounds amazing. Others are just fucking weird, and some is just that weird combination of decadence and animal cruelty.
Right.
That seems to be, like, a weird facet of, like, old school French hot cuisine, but whatever.
Hey, that's how we got veal. I'm not going to question it.
Oh, I'm not going to question it either. I've had veal before too. But anyway, all right. So it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our assholes of the week. And we got some particularly vile ones, too, because these affect children. So the very first asshole of the week we've got is that giant corporation known as Johnson & Johnson. Now, those of you who have kids, and in this case it's Teresa, have you ever used Johnson & Johnson products when you were raising your kid?
I did, yes.
Well,
not the one I think you're going to name, but knowing exactly what was in it. I mean, if you ever screw up your hair color, you can strip it out with Johnson's baby shampoo.
Yeah.
That shit is unbelievably, like, ugh.
Acidic. Yeah.
That should have been your first clue.
Yeah. Well, this week, Johnson & Johnson came forward and admitted that for decades they knew that their baby bee powder contained asbestos.
Oh, great, because it's just a big cloud of powder that you're breathing in.
And your baby, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they tell a story here of a woman who raised two daughters and had never been exposed to asbestos normally, but was fighting mesothelioma.
Yep.
Which comes from primarily asbestos. Miners that got exposed to asbestos. Mm-hmm.
By the way, do you know how that actually works? Because asbestos is like a really fibrous material. If you've ever seen you can get like a block of asbestos from like old school, like footage and movies and stuff, and they'll pull it apart and it looks like it's made out of like fibrous strings connecting it, right? But it's like that all the way down to like the microscopic level. So what happens is that when you breathe it in, these little threads of asbestos, like teeny tiny little threads, will trap themselves in the folds of the human lung.
That's no bueno.
And that basically is what causes mesothelioma. Yeah, this shit is really toxic. And
just the way they mine the talc, they found out quite a while ago, I think the first test they had on this stuff was in 57 and 58.
Yep.
They described contaminants in talc from J&J's Italian supplier as fibrous and acicular, or needle-like, and it's called tremolite.
Yep.
That's one of the six minerals that are in their naturally occurring fibrous form, are classified as asbestos. And yeah, they even go back to the 70s when they also had other internal and external groups sort of monitoring this stuff, and they all came to the same conclusion that there's at the very least a little bit of asbestos in this stuff. And I think some samples were even classified as quite a bit. It's a lot of covering up this stuff when people would find out about this. The lawsuit I mentioned happened in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So that is 20 years ago.
Yep.
When somebody tried to, and she never went very far because essentially it was on them to have the burden of proof.
Yeah. And
Johnson & Johnson had all the proof.
Yeah.
And fought to make sure they did not have to reveal any of it. That's been what they've been doing for damn near 60 years at this point, is when people have been investigating this stuff, found, this shit, they would fight hard to make sure it never came to lights. And unfortunately, it's come to lights recently, and people are fucking pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Torches and pitchforks.
Also, doesn't help that the Trump administration has been loosening restrictions on asbestos.
Lots of stuff in this story about them getting new mines to work in, all finding the same issues with the talc they're getting out of there, them still pushing through it. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with all this.
They're going to have to pay out the ass in a settlement. Yeah,
I assume they're going to be class action lawsuits.
Oh, yes.
Anybody that has had
cancer, ovarian cancer, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the primary people that have, you know, ingested a lot of this stuff is moms,
mm-hmm.
as well as their babies. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the Trump administration, we've once again got them in the assholes of the week because, as be due to their cruel border control policy that they've been doing, they found a 7-year-old girl that they detained and then died in their custody of dehydration and thirst. Yeah.
Exhaustion, dehydration, and shock less than 48 hours after she was detained along with her father.
Yeah.
They were basically did not really give a shit to have her taken care of.
Trump, yeah, and then the Trump administration came out as, look, if we had done nothing, she would have died out there in the desert. Motherfucker, she still died either way. That's not a fucking plus.
Yeah, the quotes here from, let's see, White House spokesman Hogan Gidley.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
that blonde needless, bitch.
Yeah, it's a needless death, and it's 100% preventable. If we could just come together and pass some common sense laws to disincentivize people from coming up from the border and encourage them to do it the right way, the legal way, then those types of deaths, those types of assaults, those types of rapes, the child smuggling, the human trafficking, that would all come to an end. And we hope Democrats join the president, which is like, oh, you took this story of a girl who died of something that could have probably been prevented if she got care early enough. You turn it into, hey,
victim
you want to stop the drugs, you want to stop the rapes, we need to do something. It's like, no, this is about a girl.
Yeah. Bitch needs to stop.
They turn it into a victim blaming fest.
Yeah, and bitch really needs to stop moving the goalposts before somebody takes it and shoves it right up her ass.
Yes.
And let's see, the girl began having seizures roughly 8 hours after being taken into custody. Was attended to by emergency responders who found that she was running a 105.7 degree fever. The girl reportedly had not eaten or consumed water for several days. She was transported to hospital where she went to cardiac arrest and was revived, though she died less than 24 hours later. I guess the Homeland Security posted a timeline of the girl's detention and death on Facebook. The girl's father advised Border Patrol officials that she had become sick and was vomiting before officials put the family on a bus from an outpost near the border to a Border Patrol station in Lordsburg, New Mexico, which took about 90 minutes. Upon arrival, the father notified the agents the child was not breathing. She was transported by helicopter to a hospital. She was later pronounced dead. That she died from septic shock.
Yep. And it is all these fuckers' fault. I don't want anybody to get that, to miss that or anything. This is 100% the Trump administration's fault.
Yep. And when you get to the point where you have to post a timeline to explain what happens, you fucked up.
Yeah. I hope you folks realize once the Trump administration is over, whether through the vote or through the ain't none of these motherfuckers ever going to be able to leave the United States again. Because I can tell
unless
you,
unless they go to The Hague.
Yeah, if they step 1 foot in Europe or Asia, those motherfuckers are going to get detained on the spot and have them dragged to Sweden to The Hague. It's because that is.
Should be.
Yeah, it's yeah. Fuck. That is legit, like, crimes against humanity. But fortunately, it wasn't all horrible, soul-crushing bad news. We do have one hero of the week, and it is the Supreme Court, because this week the Supreme Court declined to hear a case about defunding Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, this was a case that was brought by, as you can probably guess, Republican-led states that have been trying to defund Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood, which goes to things that are not abortions.
Yep.
They never seem to.
It's the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment. You cannot use state funds to fund any kind of abortions. And that law is like, they should know this shit by now, but the thing is, as I've talked about before, none of these fuckers really care about abortion to begin with. It's purely a political move.
Yeah, it's all disingenuous.
Also, yeah. Some of them are really fucking stupid. So
I think it's just pandering to their base.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
there's kind of one interesting thing here in this Supreme Court decision not to hear the case. One of the dissenters, well, not dissent, one of the people decided that no, we don't want to hear this, was Brett Kavanaugh.
Yep.
So yeah. So that decision is starting to bite them in the ass.
Oh yeah. Well. Oh yeah. Fucking the Christian right was pissed when this news came out. They were like, we put all this money into you and you're going to turn around and do this, you know, fucking fam, not the Family Research Council, but AFA. there were like, it was like, we've been betrayed. God, what have we done? And, you know, Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council was like, oh, now just wait and see.
Oh, the tears are delicious.
Yeah.
Pay for dirty shit with dirty money? What the fuck you think you're going to get?
Well, here's the thing. It's been theorized that the reason this happened is because Kavanaugh is trying to lay low for a while.
As well he probably should.
Also, there's some other, like, major cases that they think he specifically wanted to kick this can down the road just so he could get – just so those cases would come up. And he might end up voting differently. Huh. It's also 100% true that, yeah, maybe he just doesn't give a shit about the abortion topic anymore. And he's like, hey, I'm set for life now. Fuck you.
Maybe he took the GOP for a ride.
Yeah. No, this dude up until this point was pretty hardcore anti-abortion. So either he's had a change of heart or he's got other plans.
Yeah. Or he's just riding it out because he sees the which way the wind is starting to
blow. Yeah, that's also possible. He's seen the writing on the wall and decided, you know, I got a good gig here now. Probably
why,
be a good.
Why jeopardize it?
Yeah.
Well, the whole John Roberts thing blew up in Bush's face a couple times too.
Well, yeah, because John Roberts is the reason why same-sex marriage is now legal. He was the deciding vote in that.
That was
I want people to remember, that was a 5-4 decision, and he was the guy who turned it.
It's almost like, you know, they start hanging out with a different crowd at work, and maybe they change their mind about shit.
Well, keep in mind that part of that crowd also includes Clarence Thomas, so...
Well, yeah.
And Samuel Alito, but... yeah. But anyway, alright, so... It's now time to start the proper show proper. And the very first story we got tonight is that Michael Cohen, a.k.a. says who, a.k.a. Trump's fixer, has been sentenced to spend 3 years in prison.
Yep.
Only 3 years?
I think that's partly sort of a compromise because of all the information he gave the Mueller people.
3 years and $1 million, too.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be... Yeah.
Yep.
And probably going up a few anus sizes.
Yeah. I guess club fed, but anyway.
And the interesting thing is Trump has been just constantly saying, oh, he did it all on his own, all this sort of stuff. And like, no, he did it at the behest of Trump.
Yeah.
Every single time. Like he...
Like that, if anything now absolutely shows this fucker is guilty, it's that.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's great that he's like starting to say all this stuff directly contradicting the stuff that he already said that is on video. So, yeah. This is just it's amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh, it doesn't stop there cuz we're about to get even more cuz here's the point where we finally can actually link Trump to this shit for good. Because after that, this week we found out that during that whole thing about the hush money payment between McDougal and Cohen trying to hide all of Trump's affairs and stuff, Trump was in the room.
Yep. And also involved as the National Enquirer.
Yep.
Hmm.
Who came out and, as part of their deal they made, had to admit that, in coordination with Trump's presidential campaign, that had paid Carrie McDougal $150,000 in the run-up to the election for the exclusive rights to her story that she had an affair with Donald Trump, to keep that all a secret. And,
Damn, just God.
And now, AMI, the American Media Incorporated, the owner of National Enquirer, is essentially working with the investigation in New York, I think this is.
Yeah. Which, by the way, just a reminder, state charges cannot be pardoned.
No.
And the people in New York have basically vowed that they're basically going to put Trump through the fucking ringer. So none of this is going to end well for him. That's what I'm saying.
So sweet. So very sweet.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when you inflate a balloon and like you're trying to tie it and it slips out of your hand and just goes. This is the Trump administration.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, and now we got even more news. Marina Butina. For those you don't remember, she's that redheaded Russian woman who was palling around with folks in the NRA and now members of the Trump administration, basically various conservative figures.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you may remember that she was arrested because she was accused of having acted as a Russian agent without registering with the State Department, which is basically technically espionage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She pled guilty to it this week.
Yep. Yeah, and now she is cooperating with the government in their investigation. They're not setting a sentencing date just yet because she's still working with the government.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to sort of check in mid-February for another hearing on February 12th to sort of see how that's going before figuring out whenever they're going to sentence her. And the weird thing about all this is that it actually got the attention of Putin.
Well, of course it did. She's one of his agents.
And I believe the quote I saw from him was like, basically, why the fuck are they doing that? She hasn't done anything. It's like, well, how would he know?
Yeah. It's basically like she's saying, well, I haven't told her to do anything yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, basically, she worked with various people in the NRA, the Republican Party. Yeah, she was at events that she was able to interact with people like Donald Trump, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, Rick Santorum. You know, one leader and three dumbasses.
Yep. Boy. Well. She better hope that
getting his money's worth.
Yeah, I mean, she better hope that she ends up in a maximum security prison, because we know what happens to Putin's agents when he has no more use for them.
Yeah.
Also, and although it's not written, just a side note: the NRA is currently hemorrhaging money. I wonder if the two are connected.
I think it's also they've got no boogeymen. Yeah, like they were kind of flourishing under Obama, because it's like, oh, he's going to take your guns. You know, the black man's going to take your guns, all that sort of stuff. And, like, they don't have any worries.
Yeah. Well, there's also that and, you know, something or other about a bunch of school shootings and shit. And also, they probably don't have any more Eastern European sugar daddies feeding them illegal money. So there's that.
Yeah.
All right, and now in more Trump news, we now got another person leaving at the end of the year, and it's none other than Trump's chief of staff, John Kelly. And let's be honest, we all saw this one coming a mile away.
But it was still. Just
It was more of a thing of not if, but when.
Yeah,
because there are so many photos of him just looking like he hates himself and hates this job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the interesting thing is after he announced this, and it's like, well, who's next? And it's like, oh, there's a bunch of people that basically said, yeah, I don't want that. Like Chris Christie was somebody who said that.
Mm-hmm. It's like, nope.
Hard pass. Jared Kushner came up, which is like, he's just supposed to be solving peace in the Middle East and the opioid crisis and all everything.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck would he want this? And then they finally announced Mick Mulvaney, who is in the what is it? Office of Management and Budget director right now. Mm. Who's going to be the acting White House Chief of Staff, replacing John Kelly, which what's the acting part of this?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
It means he doesn't want the job, but he'll accept a paycheck for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's also not resigning as director of Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah.
So he's going to get two jobs now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, acting basically is technically a temporary position. So
yeah.
You could hold two jobs.
Yeah. All right, and that's basically the end of the Trump part of the show.
Yeah.
Next up is story out of Wisconsin. So, you know, we had the midterms, and basically the Democrats kind of won Wisconsin. So, during the current Republican lame duck session, they have been signing a bunch of bills and stuff to try and strip away as much power from the incoming governor and attorney general as possible. And this week, outgoing Governor Scott Walker signed all those bills into law.
Using a Venn diagram that shows how stupid he is. Because as everybody knows how Venn diagrams works, it's covering two groups.
Mm-hmm.
The outer parts of the circles are showing the differences, and the overlapping part is what's similar. And for him, the outer parts have the same things, and then he puts a statement in the middle.
It's not how a Venn diagram is supposed to work.
In the middle it says both administrations, same powers. It's like Venn diagrams are not a stylistic thing. It serves a purpose.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you can look on Twitter and find a bunch of people making fun of using like a blank version of this to put all their funny shit in there. I posted a link in the chat for some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. There's some good stuff in there. There's one that's real good. So left side is labeled as how I think Venn diagrams work. Identical lists on both sides. Statement in the middle assuring that both sides are the same. On the other side, how they actually work. Things true of thing A on side A. Things true of thing B on side B. Things shared by both A and B in the middle. It's just both differences and similarities. In the middle, circles are involved. Somebody transposed a Venn diagram over his face. Right eye, left eye, and the nose is in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good use of a Venn diagram.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and he kept saying in this whole announcement, like, see, there's nothing changing. It's like, then why did you sign these bills into law? If it's not doing anything.
Exactly.
Because he's a petty, small-minded child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will probably end up in his legacy if he doesn't run for president again.
Yep. Yeah, I think he's been basically saying that the outcry has been all hype and hysteria. It's like, no, it's all legitimate criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Now we got the science and entertainment part of the show. This next one is just precious. So as you don't know, over the week in Russia on state TV, they were showing off their newest, I guess you could call it, great, you know, leap forward in robotics and technology with this high-tech robot showing up, basically explaining and, you know, showing off. And, you know, Russians are like, wow, this is awesome. Look how far we've gone. Look how far we've gone. It turned out it was just a guy in a suit.
Yep. So they were calling this robot Robot Boris.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very Russian name.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they were airing this like tech conference mm-hmm. in Russia. Airing on Russia 24, which is a state television channel. Mm-hmm. And showing it on stage, dancing and mimicking movements and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, one site, T-Journal, mm-hmm. the tech website that's posed a list of questions about its asking, you know, where its external sensors are, why it's need to make extra unnecessary movements while dancing. They also questioned why so little existing information on such an advanced project was at, and how developers have managed to develop the machine so quickly, considering the cost and intense research associated with such projects. And they also question why Boris appears to be the perfect size for a human to fit inside.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up being right on the money, because it turned out to be a costume called Alyosha the Robot, made by a company called Show Robots, which costs about $3,800. It's mm-hmm. equipped with a microphone, tablet display, and according to the company, creates the near total illusion that before you stands a real robot.
Mm-hmm.
But people manage to get shots from the stream from like the side where you can kind of see the deck of the person.
Yep.
Then also there are shots of the guy putting the suit on
mm-hmm.
that somebody else managed to get. And yeah.
That went off really well.
Yep.
Yep.
But the people showing off this stuff mm-hmm. in the tech forum were not actually claiming the robot was real. It was mm-hmm. Russia 24, the station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they weren't claiming it was real, then why were they showing it? There's a disconnect there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I guess they just wanted to keep up and show something cool like Boston Dynamics.
Yeah, that's what they had in mind.
Yeah.
Those Boston Dynamics videos that keep coming out.
And they just failed miserably. Oh. All right. Well, next up in more science news, Voyager 2 from NASA. NASA officially announced that it has entered interstellar space.
Yep.
And this thing's been out, but this thing's been was launched back in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the sort of the second of these. Voyager 1 crossed that same boundary in 2012, but did not have
mm-hmm.
These sort of instruments in it that would be able to observe the things they wanted to on that stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Voyager 2 is now slightly more than 11 billion miles from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in some of the GIFs here, they have showing kind of the instruments reading galactic cosmic rays, sort of shoots up as it left the heliosphere. And the heliospheric particles sort of drops
mm-hmm.
very quickly. And that thing is going to be able to actually measure a lot of the data they want to get.
Yeah.
Versus Voyager 1, which is just kind of out there now. It's kind of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Is Voyager 1 the one that had the gold record on it? Was one of the Voyagers.
Yeah, I forget which one that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this thing launched in 1977,
mm-hmm.
16 days before Voyager 1.
Mm.
It's kind of crazy that the thing they put out about 2 weeks later had the better stuff in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yep. Just wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well. All right. So next up, we start in the entertainment part of the show. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has officially announced the inductees for 2019.
Yep.
And it's some good ones.
Yeah, we have The Cure.
Yeah.
Def Leppard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Radiohead.
Oh, yeah.
Roxy Music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And The Zombies.
Hmm.
Okay.
And Def Leppard, Roxy Music, and Stevie Nicks are on their first nominations.
Mm-hmm.
So they got in first ballot.
Of course, technically, Stevie Nicks is already in there since you know, she's part of Fleetwood Mac. So, yeah.
But she's in for her solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess the nominees that did not make it from this round are Devo,
mm-hmm.
John Prine, Kraftwerk, LL Cool J, MC5, Rage Against the Machine, Rufus and Chaka Khan, and Todd Rundgren.
Yeah.
Yeah. And most of those will end up in there.
Eventually. Yeah. Although it's a crying shame MC5 isn't there, because, I mean, they basically started an entire subgenre.
Yeah. I do find it kind of hilarious that Rage Against the Machine is up for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Like a very anti-corporate, anti-government kind of group.
Well, so is MC5, but...
Yeah. I also guess people recently just starting to figure out Rage Against the Machine is not a big fan of right-wingers.
Mm-hmm.
But their music is very anti-right-wing.
You think?
Yeah, I wonder what most of the machine that they're raging against is.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think with all the material and stuff they put out with the images of Che Guevara and Mao Zedong and everything, you think, gee, I wonder if these guys vote Republican.
Yeah, there's a group of people that just listen to the music and don't think about what any of it says.
Like outgoing Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Or like people who assumed that Willie Nelson was a Republican. Though his whole fucking life stands for everything against it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, just his whole life, that's all.
Yeah.
Just all of it.
Yeah. We've all kind of come, basically something we've all had to come to realize is that people, a good chunk of the people who is, you know, who are ages 40 and up are really stupid.
Yeah, and it's sort of the whole thing of the way people, you know, tell entertainers, like, you know, stay in your lane sort of thing. Mm. Don't talk about politics. It's like, what if they're...
It's like, what if this is my lane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Rage Against the Machine is kind of largely about politics.
Yeah. It's pretty much everything they're about.
You know where Devo came from? The Kent State shootings.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah. All right. Next up, we have the announcement that the National Film Registry is going to be adding 25 new films to its library. And in that group is going to include... Let's take a look here.
Here we got Brokeback Mountain. Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
My Fair Lady.
Yep.
The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Todd. Monterey Pop. Let's see. Okay, yeah, they got them here in order. Bad Day at Black Rock.
That's from 55.
Broadcast News.
1987.
Yep, Brokeback Mountain, which is pretty recent.
2005, and God, that movie was everywhere back then.
Yeah, Cinderella.
The Disney film from 1950?
Yeah.
All right.
Days of Wine and Roses.
1962.
Dixon, Wanamaker, Expedition to Crow Agency.
No idea where that's from.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. Let's see, Eve's Bayou.
Yeah.
97, The Girl Without a Soul.
1917.
Yep. Hairpiece, a film for nappy-headed people.
That's from 84.
Yep, Hearts and Minds.
74.
And we mentioned HUD.
63.
Yep, The Informer.
1935.
Jurassic Park.
You better know that one.
The Lady from Shanghai.
47.
Leave Her to Heaven.
45.
Monterey Pop.
That's 1968. Yeah, that's the documentary. For those of you who don't know, that was the one where... No, wait, is that... That's not Altamont, is it? No, yeah. This is Monterey Pop Festival. This is with Hendrix and everything, so yeah. Okay.
Okay, so that's Dixon Wanamaker thing is a documentary.
Ah, gotcha.
It's a film showcasing Native Americans with footage from the 1908 Dixon Wanamaker expedition, which was found in 1982 in an antique store in Montana.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that's pretty interesting. Let's see, where were we at?
My Fair Lady.
Yep, My Fair Lady. We got The Navigator.
Classic. Mm-hmm.
On the Town.
1949.
One-Eyed Jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Pick Up on South Street.
Yeah.
Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
We got The Shining.
Yeah, The Shining, I think we've pretty much all seen that one.
Yeah, Smoke Signals.
Mm-hmm.
And Something Good, Negro Kiss.
Yep, that is one of the like first film reels from the early days of film.
Yeah, 29-second film that's earliest known footage of black intimacy on screen.
Yep, it's from 1898. It's old.
And I guess the Library of Congress released a report in 2013 that found that 70% of the nation's silent feature films have been lost forever.
Yep.
Only 14% exist in the original 35mm format.
That's true.
Preserving these, so that's
pretty good.
They have to. Because you got to remember back in, for a long time, film was considered a novelty and not like a proper art form.
Yeah.
So they just didn't really store these things very well.
Yeah, a lot of them were very much things you would see at the carnival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At a Nickelodeon, as it were.
Yeah. Mm. But, yeah, so, yeah, more pieces of film history getting preserved forever for future generations. Nice. All right. Next up, The Peanuts. You guys remember The Peanuts, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Charlie Brown, Linus, so. Snoopy.
They're still popular.
Sure they are. Well, Apple has won a bidding war for the rights to make new Peanuts TV shows.
Huh. Oh, how do I feel about this?
I really don't know.
Yeah. As somebody who does not have any Apple products, this is like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Unless they make a deal with another streaming service or some channel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, probably not going to see these.
Yeah.
They are really just doing everything they can to just be the only company in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's seeming to start being to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, they're failing miserably at it.
Yeah, they're actually having to promote the iPhone because it's not selling as well as they would like. So they have to actually offer like promotional deals and such. Like, oh, they've never had to do this because they just completely ran on their marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their allure of them being like the cool thing.
Well, see, that's the problem with, you know, having a product that's so ubiquitous.
And one that's getting more expensive with each new iteration.
And one that also has, you know, a good competitor, you know, Android.
Yeah.
So they aren't the only game in town anymore.
Yeah.
No. And, you know, people like Motorola are putting out these mid-price phones and, it makes people stop and think, do I really need a $1,200 phone?
Yeah, sort of like, well, if I'm going to spend that much money, I'm not getting rid of it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that too. I mean, you can buy a used car for that.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Yeah.
And I'm still happy with my Note 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There's a lot of people who are very happy with their S5, but that, you know, in a way that I have heard people argue that it was the pinnacle for Android, and it could be. You know, we had removable batteries, we had a plastic back instead of having a glass sandwich like we do now, and, you know, it was a good form factor, it was slick, it was fast, you know?
Wait, what's the shit about not having removable batteries?
No, you can't remove batteries on any modern phones, Pat. That's just not a thing anymore.
No, because they're literally glass sandwiches, so you have to get the glue off, which is a pain in the ass. Half the time you crack the digitizer and your screen is shot. You can't they're just go look up Right to Repair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lewis, what's his name? Rossman?
Lewis, yeah. Rossman. Yeah, yeah, he's a he's a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's me peeling the back of my phone off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can access this stuff. Which is the only thing that's annoying is when it's really cold, my SIM card doesn't get recognized.
Oh, no.
So I have to peel it off, pull out the SIM card, put it back in, and I get my cell service again. But
yeah,
that's the only downside.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, and headphone jacks? Yeah, those aren't a thing now anymore either.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dongles. That's the hot thing.
Living the dongle life.
Yeah, just tonight I tried to hand Scott the Samsung headphones that came with our kid's phone. Uh-huh. And he's like, he shows me the 3.5 millimeter jack. He's like, this won't fit. I'm like, God damn it, I forgot about that.
Yeah. fucking dongles.
And I got
a dongle they can get.
That are expensive wireless headphones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That sounds like crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what it looks like when you don't pay attention to, demographic shit.
You gotta be able to repair your own shit.
Yeah.
Yep. Hats off to Motorola, though, for partnering with iFixit to actually give them parts.
Yeah, that was great.
That's awesome.
Yep. That, yeah.
Yeah, that's the phone brand I use. Yep. I got a Motorola G4, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like $150
If I could get my mom to use her G5, oh my god! I could get her to use it.
All right, and now we got the movie TV portion. First up, we've got a new trailer for Godzilla King of the Monsters.
They're pushing this thing like mad, and I'm glad they are.
Yeah, it might be terrible, but I want to watch it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't that basically like the modus operandi for pretty much all kaiju movies?
Basically.
It may look terrible, but I want to watch it anyway.
And the weird thing is they got the look actually down really well for this, what the trailers they've been showing.
Yeah.
There's lots of really good art design and all this in it.
Yeah, I just hope there's a lot more of Godzilla in it.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like the notion of them trying to solve climate change with these giant monsters.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works, but okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, these titans, are they going to protect us? Or are they going to break shit?
Yeah.
Well, what has Godzilla historically done?
Just break shit.
Yeah, break shit.
That's just what he does.
He kills the other monsters in exchange for breaking your shit.
Yeah. I mean, Blue Oyster Cult made a whole song about this. Come on, people.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah. But it is nice they're kind of going for it with this, because it's Godzilla versus King Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
There's Mothra and Rodan.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Classics.
Yeah.
These are the actions of a studio that knows they aren't going to have a license forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going for it.
Now, is Mechagodzilla going to show up?
Oh, fuck, I hope so.
Maybe
to save that one for the sequel.
This reminds me, I really need to see. I have not seen Shin Godzilla yet. Mm. I really need to see it. Everyone who's watched it have told it is a instant classic. But oh well. And next up, the story that you know probably and probably sick of because it's been everywhere on the internet the moment it popped up. The motion poster for the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Oh my god.
Can we not do this?
Just, you guys go look it up on your own. You don't need us to tell you about it.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
It's well, I mean, I looked at it, I examined it critically, and I'm like, okay, I see what they're going for here, but whoever the artist was kind of forgot about the effects of perspective.
Yeah.
It ends up looking like complete nightmare fuel.
Yeah, you know, Sonic isn't like Mickey Mouse where, you know, his head always had the upper parts of his head always have to look like they're in profile or anything like that.
Yeah. But also, what the hell is going on with the body?
I don't
it's like they put Sonic's head on top of a furry human.
Yeah, And, you know, if you've seen the other poster, you know, where it's showing off his swole legs, you know, sitting on top of the Golden
Gate. There are people trying to recreate that shot, and they're not having much luck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can get up there, to be honest.
Well, I mean, just the legs. The way he's doing his legs. Like, I don't think this is realistic.
Yeah. I've actually looked at what like the synopsis for this movie is, and they're basically going with the idea that Sonic is like a cryptid, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
And just why?
I don't know. It's like
it could work if they had the right people. I don't know if they had the right people though.
No, this is starting to look more like a train wreck by everything we're seeing of it so far.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to let Sega's financials take the pants on this one. Zero out of ten. Will not go see.
Yeah, and if you remember the fan film that came out, like
that was actually good.
Yeah,
because that was based on the game Sonic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's.
I mean, they actually got Jaleel White to sign on that project. So, yeah.
And this looks like it's the Super Mario Brothers movie with a budget.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't just like, hey, they left this shit after making Blade Runner. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
All I'm gonna say is there is going to be so much porn of this version of Sonic. Just. I mean, if I know the Sonic fan base as well as I do.
I know the Sonic fan base, but they have to care first.
Give it time.
This is just, oh my god, go away kind of bad.
I love the ones where they're taking that model and replacing it with Ugandan Knuckles.
that kind of pissed me off too, because I want that meme to die.
We all want that meme to die, but it won't.
The best
and then one of them replaced it with Sonichu.
Yeah, like the best part of this is that there's so much Sonic memes that people can respond to this stuff,
mm-hmm.
Infinite number of ways.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is this Sega's money that's being spent on this, or did somebody license it?
It's licensed.
Okay.
Sega's not putting up any money for this.
Okay. Well then.
Honestly, if they did, I don't think Yuji Naga would ever work again.
Well, I don't think he's technically working at Sega anymore.
He's had his own studio for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, I think there was some like conceptual art for like a poster put up before they had, you know, actors lined up. And I think it had Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Like the main guy was drawn like Chris Pratt. The Sonic in that looked a lot better than what it seems like this is going to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, from what I heard, he was actually involved in the original project and then decided against it.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to. No, there's no probably about it. I'm not going to go see this.
But I might.
The doubt.
But
maybe on a dollar ticket. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's also like this Sonic art concept that also linked that shows him like lying in the back, and it looks weird. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like that looks better than whatever this thing looks like.
Yeah, I just I'll be honest. As soon as we actually see what this thing like looks like in full, that'll pretty much be the end of it.
Yeah. Unless they change it.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, at this point, they could scrub the whole thing and replace it with a Sonic X concept, and that would actually be an improvement. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless this trailer, well, it wasn't a trailer, it was just a little motion poster.
Mm-hmm.
Unless this was a huge troll.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, involved, we can only hope.
We got the concept piece that we were talking about here that you can take a look at. Just
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that does look better. But anyways.
But like, we haven't even seen the actual mod. We've just seen the outline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, I saw somebody put Gritty's face on the front of it.
Because of course they would.
It's like, all right, this is better. And there are people finding the poster of him on the Golden Gate Bridge. And, like,
he has been... Seriously, do it. He has been seriously working on his cardio.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right. Next up, Netflix news. Netflix has acquired another awesome documentary, because let's be honest, if you want to get awesome documentaries, Netflix is pretty much the place to be right now.
It's half documentary, half comedy specials. Mm-hmm. That's about it. And the rest is bullshit.
Reality shows and old movies.
Yep.
And Friends.
And Friends. And Netflix has acquired a documentary about the Fyre Festival that's going to be coming out January 18th.
Okay. Oh, because I want to know how this clusterfuck happened.
Oh, it's this is going to be so sweet.
This is from Chris Smith, who did the Jim Carrey documentary about him doing Man on the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got good talent behind it.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's going to be out on the 18th of January. So pretty soon.
Yeah, which tells me that these documentarians were filming this stuff as all of this was happening, because they maybe suspected that this would either be a historic event in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a little bit of the trailer for it here in the article itself. So they're showing, like, here's what it was supposed to be, and here's what it was
actually turned out to be.
Yeah, you can say it, Phil. They kind of suspected it was going to go tits up.
And they just wanted to be there to watch the damages.
Yeah.
And have the rights.
Yeah. And if it turned out to be awesome, then so much the better. But, well,
we are where we are.
The weird thing
nothing great. Nothing makes great television like a complete and utter disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And weird thing better about your own life.
This is the second documentary on this thing. Hulu signed one a little while ago. So now there's one for every service out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Soon.
Are we gonna see the Richie Rich version of Lord of the Flies?
Oh.
Is that what a Lord of the Flies reboot is gonna be?
Fyre Festival. I'd watch it.
Yeah. Aren't they doing Lord of the Flies again?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've done it like 80 times, but
that's
let's
just
face it, that
blank.
Story just still holds up.
Yeah.
It's just fill in the blank. Are they doing a new Matrix? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, usually, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to do a new Shrek. Because, like, the first one was already...
We didn't have seven more of those already.
Mm-hmm.
We got to start better from the beginning. Not because you see the fan-made...
more money than it has ingenuity.
Yeah.
Have you seen the fan-made Shrek movie? It's like 200 creators come together to make like specific like segments of it, and they're all varying different qualities, and it's hilarious.
Oh,
both in the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's some scenes where it's like, oh, these people had actual money, they have like sets and such, and this one just drew like stick figure art for the scene.
That's usually how fan creations go.
Mm.
Yeah. When you don't have a standard established, yeah, you end up with that.
I think that's part of the point.
All right. Well, and finally, our last story for the night, The Punisher is coming back for a second season.
Good, because that first one was awesome.
Uh-huh.
Before he gets killed by Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, that might be one of the few shows that the Netflix ends up keeping, because I don't think Disney's going to do the R-rated stuff on their streaming
service. It's possible. But,
anyways.
So...
Frank Castle coming out. When is this one? January?
I think it's just January. Yeah. It was something part of their, hey, here's what's coming to Netflix in January sort of thing. So I think The Incredibles 2 is also coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
Near the end of the month.
You know, one day some of these movie makers have to just, you know, and TV makers, they need to approach this from basically the fact that, I mean, let's really face it, Frank Castle is basically a serial killer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's how Netflix handled this.
Awesome. I need to watch it then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the best take on The Punisher I've ever seen. Mm. So, yeah, definitely give it a
yeah. Break. All right, well, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. So, So we probably will have a show next week, but we probably will not the following. Because we'll probably still be in the Christmas coma. So with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question or a comment or something you'd like to read, want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked down in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, archive.org, RSS, pretty much any place where, you know, podcasts like these can be downloaded and enjoyed through your ear holes. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Felipe Donolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, and Teresa Sammons, good night.